Oxford Sparks Podcast, Episode 2, Matters of Scale, Part 2.
Well, this is one of the problems with the research we do, is the problem of scales. So things that are on a very small scale, if they're moving, are not necessarily easy to see.
Does biology have a problem of scale?
Now, you can record some of that. There's lots of dynamical things, measurements, so you can measure actually how things move. And there's structural measurements that tell you about the structure of things, but it's a very difficult area to look at, especially in water. My name is Sylvia McLean, and I'm interested in looking at the structure of biological molecules in solution and how that relates to biochemical function.
Life is messy. It's always moving, always in flux, and unfortunately for biologists, it doesn't exactly hold still for them to take a picture, which means interrogating nature as it really exists is hard. To really understand how nature works, to get down into the nitty-gritty of life, we need to understand the fundamental principles of biology.
Biology is a huge subject. I mean, this is one of the problems, right? So if you go just look up biology at the Oxford English Dictionary or biology on Google, and it'll tell you, you know, all of the massive number of things it relates to. So sort of biology of the Chesapeake Bay. Okay, so that's about ecosystems, really. It's about fish and how they interact with water and interact with the food they eat and sunlight and all these kind of big things. But biology also scales all the way back down to atomic level things, which is actually where I would think most of the magic happens. So scale in terms of research is huge.
Knowing how biology works on different scales is important. But when we consider biology at the largest scales, looking at behavior or physiology or ecosystems, what we're looking at is the end result of many, many different biochemical reactions, each of which occurs at a very small scale. Everything from DNA replication to cellular communication. These things all happen at the atomic level.
So things like protein folding, drug-ligand interactions, water hydration on a very, very tiny scale in solution. So it's important, instead of looking at things that are stuck in one kind of manifold, like a crystal structure, so we actually look at things as a liquid. So we look at direct hydrogen bonding from water to biological molecules.
Now this is important. Often to look at the structure of a biological molecule, like a protein or something, you need to use a technique called X-ray crystallography. Because the molecular structure is smaller than the wavelength of visible light, you need to use something with a smaller wavelength again, something like X-rays. But the only way to do this is to transform, to fix your protein into an ordered crystal structure. And then you can shine high-intensity X-rays at that and measure what comes out. But that means taking the protein out of its natural environment and fixing it into that crystal structure. It's a false environment, but it's the best we can do. And like most experimental fields in science, we've got to rely on the measurements we can make so that we can infer back what's happening in nature.
Most sort of structural studies, so people that understand the structural things, are either done on molecules in the gas phase or done on molecules in the solid state, just because they're easier to actually measure. But liquid is where most of life happens, right? So most of your body is 70% water. Or something like that, 60 to 70, our whole planet functions in water. So the only way that proteins in your body work, for instance, is with water around. Okay, so that's why it's the most fundamental physical milieu of life. It's also the most difficult to understand because it moves. So it's not a static structure you can look at, it's actually a moving thing. So looking at things as they occur in water is not trivial. It's very, very, very difficult because most of them occur either too rapidly to measure or very, very, very slowly. So what we end up having to do is to control these things so that we can measure them as they're happening. But then that's still a false environment, right? This is a fundamental problem with most research, right? Is that we do measure model systems. When people look at cancer and try to look at cancer agents and how they might affect different things, we look at cancer cells. We rarely treat whole people with cancer, right? So it's very difficult to actually map all this stuff together. So the fundament of what we do is we do something called neutron scattering.
Slightly different from using X-rays. This time we're firing neutrons at the sample and measuring what comes out.
Okay, so a neutron is part of one of the particles that actually makes up a nucleus of an atom. Neutron scattering of things on liquids. And the nice thing about scattering techniques, which were invented by the Braggs, is that you can actually look at things on the atomic scale, and it's a direct structural technique. And what that means is that you're actually directly probing the structure instead of trying to infer the structure from something else.
So why are the neutrons so useful? Well, with any liquid, you need a holding container, and the neutrons are small enough that they pass through the container, probing the structure of the liquid that we're interested in.
So you have to have something that can get in there and probe the structure. Okay, now the way that it works is it works by you have these free neutrons. They go in and they strike the atomic nuclei of the whatever sample you have. So say you're measuring just pure water. Okay, you have a neutron, it comes in, it hits the nuclei of the oxygen or the hydrogen atom, and it bounces off, okay? So it's a bit like dropping a pebble in a pond. You go and drop a pebble in a pond and you get big waves coming out. So imagine then that you drop two pebbles in a pond simultaneously. And if you've ever done that, you'll notice that the waves either constructively or destructively interfere. Which all that means is they get bigger, or they have peaks and valleys and peaks and troughs. And that's what you get, that's what you're actually looking at in a diffraction pattern. So that's what neutrons can tell you. But what that also tells you is it tells you about the distances between different atoms.
So we have ways of probing the lower scales of biology, but we do still come up against this problem of scale. How do we marry up all of these very small measurements with a larger, messier biological system, something like a walrus or a human?
Well, if you can understand the fundamental principles behind why things bind together and why things, for instance, are hydrated by water in a certain way. So think of a protein, okay? And a protein's a very big object, but proteins do all the work in your body pretty much. And then you're trying to wonder how a small chemical might actually fit into that protein in order to make it do something, okay? And that something could be sending signals between cells. That something could be you eat carbohydrates and those have to be broken down in some manner to give glucose to your body, right? So the food you eat has to be processed by the proteins in your body to do something. But it also actually happens on an atomic scale. Okay, so the actual breaking of bonds is what all the energy in your body is provided by the breaking of chemical bonds. All right, so if you understand the fundamentals of that, you can start understanding things like, how do I make better drugs, right? I want a drug that I know needs to fit into this specific protein. How do I actually design that? Wait a minute, I actually know what it's going to do when I put it in the human body. I know what it's going to do if I put it in water, so that it has a link in terms of that. It's also sort of the fundamental physics of life.
One of the most pertinent questions related to the physics of life is concerned with proteins. Specifically, how do they fold?
Pass. Nobody knows that. I mean, for different systems, there's lots of theories about what regulates it, but nobody actually knows.
Don't you think that's interesting? Proteins are essential for life, and their entire function is derived from their structure and the way they fold up, and yet we still don't actually understand how that structure forms. We don't understand how they go from being a linear chain to a complex and yet still ordered structure that's conserved wherever you find them, even across different species.
It's very difficult to look at a protein folding. It happens very quickly. It happens in your body where you can't see it do that. So we have to use lots of model systems to try to probe that folding process. We just know it's not random. It can't be random, right? And the reason why it can't be random is because if you sat on a piece of paper and you drew out a really long chain of amino acids and then tried to calculate why it would fold into this, it's got lots of theoretical ways it can fold, right? But it doesn't. They tend to fold over and over and over in the same manner. And why that happens and how that occurs is completely it's not really, there's a lot of theories about why we think it occurs, but nobody actually knows how it occurs. So it's not really clear exactly the how and why they do that. You can test sort of if I boil my, it's like an egg, right? If you take an egg and boil it, it turns into a different structure because you completely denature the proteins in the egg. So on a macromolecular scale, you can see that happen. On the atomic level of detail, you can't.
You know, physicists are out there worrying about particles, looking for neatly packaged theories of everything. But here, biologists have got a lot of ground to cover, just in terms of understanding what's happening down at the fundamental scales of life. And that's exciting. It means there's the potential for a lot of big discoveries still to be made.
I mean, the fascinating thing about biology is that there's no kind of fundamental theory of biology. I think about before there was a periodic table. And basically, people were running around isolating this chemical, isolating that chemical, doing all this amazing stuff, but they had no pattern. There was no method behind this madness, and they had to actually sit down and work that out. And biology is sort of still in that stage where we're actually trying to work things out. There's no fundamental underlying theory of biology. But it's a very, very complicated system. It's a very complex system. So it's actually a problem of complexity more than it is anything else.
So will one day biology have its own fundamental, complete theory of everything? Who knows? But until then, we can have a lot of fun using the knowledge we've got about the ways in which nature works at the atomic level to understand us as living organisms, to work out how our bodies work, and maybe even one day, how and why they break. You've been listening to the Oxford Sparks podcast, narrated by me, Chris Lintott, and produced by Ed Prosser. You can find a full list of credits and much else besides on our website at oxfordsparks.net.